The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We have a lot to get to on today's program. We're going to talk about Hezbollah's ever-expanding arsenal. If you look back at the 34-day war with Israel in 2006 and just compare their stockpile of missiles with today, it's frightening, really. When you think about Hezbollah's growing power. And, of course, behind Hezbollah, as we well know, you have their state sponsor, Iran. And so we'll discuss that as well. And also, more broadly, just the next world war that so many nations are preparing for. This is reality. There's lots of people, of course, in the United States and Britain that are enjoying their festive season. But this is reality. Yesterday, I made the point on the show that Satan wants to keep the carnal-minded subjects of this world satisfied. And so he fills this world with all of these things, so much materialism, and then all of these pagan customs and traditions. What a huge distraction. And yet people get caught up into it, and they actually think that this world is a pretty good place. They think that human beings, for the most part, they think that human beings can be trusted, but can they be trusted? Look at this world. Look at the real world. Vladimir Putin, to take one example, he's preparing for World War III. That's what we've been seeing in quite a few articles over the last couple weeks. Richard Palmer's handed me a stack of them. Here's Vladimir Putin, the leader of Russia. He's preparing for war. And of course, Bible prophecy has something to say about that. The Bible talks about this. I'll play for you later on in the show some sound bites from my father, where, as he said last year at this time, he had his first Key of David program on the Prince of Russia. And then he made a part two to that series, or a part two to that subject, I think in June or July of this year. We've been warning of this. And then you look at these many headlines from the past couple of weeks, Newsweek, for example. Putin is preparing for World War III. Is Trump? That's what Newsweek asks. That brings up another subject that we'll get into in the second segment. I mean, look at the way Newsweek puts it all on Trump. He's been in office less than a year. Imagine a headline like that in the sixth or the seventh year or the eighth year of President Obama. Putin is preparing for World War III. Is Obama preparing for World War III? Obama was the one who was brushing aside the Russian threat in 2012. I'll play that soundbite for you in just a bit. What a difference, though. And look what it says about our major media today. Now that Trump's in there, Russia's a threat. Okay, we understand. Now that Trump's in office, Russia's preparing for World War III. Well, they are. But where was this coverage just a year or two ago? This is from the Newsweek piece. Russia, surrounded by enemies, is readying to fight an epic war of survival. An epic war. That's Newsweek. Coming from the far left, it says at least that's what Vladimir Putin wants his countrymen to think. Nearly every evening, Russian state-controlled television leads news broadcasts with video of Russian planes in action over Syria, interspersed with images of NATO tanks and troops menacing Russia's borders. I mean, they're putting a vivid image in front of Russians, night in and night out. As I say, Americans and Brits aren't thinking of this at this time of year, certainly. But what about on Russia TV? every evening, Russian jets flying over Syria, and then the NATO tanks menacing Russia's borders. They're preparing. Russia's preparing for war. They want to unite the country around Vladimir Putin. And, of course, we see Putin expanding his empire, much, much more aggressive. And as he's consolidated his power at home, now he's looking abroad. That's been Russia's history. This piece at Newsweek, there's another more worrying reason for the Kremlin's belligerent rhetoric. It's convinced that war is imminent. As long ago as 2013, even before the conflict in Ukraine, the Russian Defense Ministry's annual strategic plan, titled The Defense of Russia, predicted a serious global or regional conflict involving Russia before 2023. It says senior Russians talk about not if, but when there's going to be a major war. That's quoting from some expert. They're already on a war footing and have been on it for a long time. They've been on this for a long time, certainly longer than 11 months. Putin's preparing for World War III. Did Obama? Is Trump? Is the United States and Britain? Are they ready for this? This article quotes Vladimir Putin himself saying the economic ability to increase the production of defense products and services quickly is a vital element of military security. This is what he's telling his defense officials. We've got to get all these large companies on board and together to be able to rapidly build up our defense, to be ready for war, to be ready for conflict. Newsweek says what concerns many in the U.S. and Europe is how Putin is planning to use Russia's new warships, submarines, helicopters, and Balava-class missiles. Russia is engaged in a strange sort of unilateral arms race, says one former British ambassador to Russia who did not wish to be quoted on the record, as he now has a different brief. It says, historically, every previous arms race has ended in war. Except in Russia's case, nobody is quite sure who they are preparing to fight and where. Here there's this massive buildup, a sort of unilateral arms race. Russia's new warships, submarines, I mean, they're all over. You see stories here in the UK press. Russian warships, they're just routinely crossing through UK waters. There was a story in the Telegraph this morning saying that the Royal Navy's keeping busy during this Christmas season. And of course, all of Britain's ships happen to be at home right now, home for the holidays, as I read last week. So I suppose they've got a pretty good defense around Britain's borders. But here come all of these Russian ships just crossing through UK waters. And the UK is saying, well, we're not going to be intimidated. But Russia's doing whatever it wants. We talked recently about the tremendous success that Russia had in Syria. And this article in Newsweek, it brings it out. They're ready to build on this. They're ready to build on Georgia and Crimea and now Syria. So much for the quagmire. Having scored an easy strategic victory in Syria. This is Newsweek. Having scored an easy strategic victory in Syria. That's what it turned out to be. No quagmire there. This was an easy victory. Newsweek says the temptation for Russia to get involved in another conflict is great. Russia spent a tiny fraction of the blood and treasure that the U.S. and its allies invested in Iraq. Why? I mean, why is it going so well for Russia in Syria? And yet the United States, I mean, everywhere you see America's fingerprints, look at the blood that's been spilled. Look at the trillions of dollars that has been spent. You talk about a quagmire. It hasn't been that for Russia. But for the United States, 16 years of war in Afghanistan. And then finally, just in recent weeks, ISIS is crushed in Iraq. And so we hand it over effectively to Iran. Russia's calling the shots in Syria. Hezbollah, as we'll see in the next segment, they're arming in Lebanon. Tens of thousands of missiles aimed at Israel. And these are not the kinds of missiles they were firing in 2006. And Israel knows. Israel knows the next time there's a major, major conflict with Hezbollah in Lebanon, they're going to have to contend with some serious missile strikes. Now, Israel's got some better defenses set up since 2006 as well. But still, when you have missiles that are actually aimed and hit their target, that's quite an upgrade for Hezbollah's arsenal. Rather than just all these random, you know, firings of smaller missiles that don't really have any aim to them. This is 2017. This is the world of today. But here, coming back to Russia and Syria, a tiny fraction of the blood and treasure that the U.S. spent, and they got enormous diplomatic capital out of it. They get to claim their intervention as a great victory, and they're now back as a force to be reckoned with. So, of course, they'll want to try to repeat the trick somewhere else. Everybody loves a short, victorious war. They're back in the Middle East. They're back. They're pulling allies away from the United States. They're pushing the United States out of the region. Newsweek says Putin has been promoting a narrative that portrays Russia as the victim of U.S. aggression. So here comes the propaganda ministers. This is what's all over Russia TV. It's the U.S. that's the aggressor. It's NATO that's on the board, the menacing power on the borders of Russia. This has been reinforced daily on Russian state TV with stories on U.S. support for anti-Russian fascists in Ukraine and the U.S.'s alleged support for ISIS in Syria. Even Russia's school children are being enlisted in the effort to cast Russia as a brave defender of weak nations against U.S. bullying. A recent internet video popular in Russia featured children as young as 10 dressed in military uniform and standing in front of the statue of Mother Russia on the battlefield of Stalingrad, singing, "We are tired of the hegemony of America. We're ready to follow you into the fight, Uncle Vladimir." These are 10-year-olds. These are 10-year-olds just consuming all of this propaganda. Putin's consolidated his power at home, and he's done so with brutal force as well. This is a dangerous and evil man we're talking about, as Richard Palmer wrote about last week in his trumpet brief. That was a Newsweek piece that I just gave to you. Putin's preparing for World War III. Is the United States ready for it? Forget about Trump or Obama. Is the U.S. ready for it? Is Britain ready for it? There's a Politico piece. This is just from 2-3 days ago. Trump, Putin, and the new Cold War. This author here, Susan Glasser, she begins the piece by talking about how concerned Germany is over the rising power of Russia and says that when Angela Merkel met with Trump a few months back, she brought in a map, evidently to show just how aggressive Russia has been. You know, welcome to the office of president, Mr. Trump. Now look at this menace. Look at what we're facing in Eastern Europe. Germany's concerned. I mean, that factors into Bible prophecy as well. Putin, she brings out in this piece at Politico that Putin wants to go back to the good old days. We've talked about this before. The glory days of the USSR, the Soviet Union. And this piece brings out how that for the first few years of his power, Putin really concentrated on consolidating all of the power within Russia. And now he's looking beyond the borders. Here he is now, today. He's Russia's longest serving leader since Stalin. You can see why Germany's concerned. We wrote about this way back in 2004. Russia frightens Europe and fulfills Bible prophecy. Russia is frightening Europe. And so Germany's going to react in the only way Germany has typically reacted when there's this kind of a threat. They're going to go looking for a strong man of their own. They're nervous. This Politico piece, Susan Glasser, she says here, as the Germans told the skeptical American president on that March day in the White House, Putin is back to fighting the Cold War, even if we in the West are not. Not quite 9 months later, the new Cold War that Angela Merkel warned Trump about appears to be hotter than ever. It says year-end magazine cover stories feature Putin's scowling face and lengthy expositions trying to figure out what the tough guy in the Kremlin wants, not to mention his puzzling relationship with the American president. Here we are in the new Cold War. Glasser points out, by the way, that it was President Obama who basically brushed aside the Russian threat. Who can forget his debate with Mitt Romney back in 2012? This is clip number one.
Governor Romney, I'm glad that you recognize that Al-Qaeda is a threat. Because a few months ago, when you were asked what's the biggest geopolitical threat facing America, you said Russia. Not Al-Qaeda, you said Russia. In the 1980s are now calling to ask for their foreign policy back because, you know, the Cold War has been over for 20 years.
That's Obama back in 2012, ridiculing Mitt Romney. Mocking Mitt Romney for saying Russia posed a threat to the United States. And where are the news media today ridiculing and mocking Barack Obama for what he said in 2012? In 2012, they were cheering him on. Yeah, he's right. Romney's just using all these scare tactics. He's just a warmonger. The media sings a different tune today, that's for sure. Now Russia's the threat. And it's so bad that Putin's in collusion or vice versa with Trump. Trump's in collusion. That's been the story. That's been the story for months. Glasser in this piece says the debate point went to Obama, but Romney was vindicated by events. Yes, indeed. He was vindicated by events, but he never did win the presidency, did he? No, he just disappeared. He disappeared, but Russia didn't. Obama didn't. And Russia's been on the march ever since. Crimea in 2014. Did anyone notice? Is anyone concerned? Did the media sound the alarm? Not like they should have. Welcome to Cold War number two. That's what one security analyst says. He's got connections in Moscow. He knows what's going on. They know it in Moscow. The Russian Prime Minister, Dmitry Medvedev, he said as much just last year. We're back in Cold War days. Glasser says in her piece, in nearly two decades of closely following Russia, I've never heard so many American officials in and out of government use the language of a new Cold War. These days, whenever the subject of Putin comes up with America's professional Russia watchers, the word war inevitably follows. I mean, look at all of the hope and the optimism that was there in 1989. And after that, soon after, the Berlin Wall comes down in 89. The Soviet Union it splits apart there in the early 1990s, and everyone in the West was rejoicing. Here, Russia's going to become a democratic nation. We're going to advance democracy and freedom. That seems like more than a generation ago. It seems like hundreds of years ago now. We're right back to the Cold War, Cold War number two. She says here in this Politico piece, by the end of Putin's first few years in power, he had succeeded in taking control over virtually all rival power centers, real and potential. Those years saw the end of Russia's independent media, the canceling of regional elections, the neutering of all the federal parliament and the renationalization of valuable oil and gas assets. Most grimly of all, they saw the ruthless and barbaric war against separatists in Chechnya. It was a terrible and disheartening spectacle. She says here later on, the events of 1989, when the wall came tumbling down and the Soviet bloc crumbled, ushered in a period of great optimism, graduating into such a world as I did. It was easy to carry the sense of freedom, freedom's unbroken march, into the trials and tribulations of adulthood. Today, in the Trump era, we are living in a heart-rendingly different time. Now, our conversations are about conflict and confrontation, about closing, not about opening. Russia's short-lived experiment in freedom has ended. The march of democracy has been reversed, and Putin this fall even surpassed Leonid Brezhnev's long Cold War tenure in the Kremlin. A new era of Russian chauvinism and aggression has begun. A new era. The new Cold War. Cold War number two. She says, I must confess that these days it looks to me like a state of denial. Increasingly, I find myself wondering about the logic of the belief that since war is unthinkable, it cannot happen. Modern history is littered with unthinkable things that came to pass. Yes, indeed, the unthinkable will happen. Herbert Armstrong said that decades ago. He said it decades ago. He said it in the 1980s. And as she brings out, modern history is littered with unthinkable things coming to pass. That's the thing here, is we've got to face reality. We've got to look at this world as it is. Forget about the distractions. Forget about the materialism. Forget about the so-called holiday spirit. What about Russia and these other menacing powers and their build-up to war? Whenever the confrontation, she says here, finally, wherever the confrontation is headed, there is increasingly little doubt that Putin and his Kremlin advisors see today's multipolar field of play as a great opportunity to compete with, to defy, to scorn, and even to humble the American superpower. Every single opportunity. How prepared is the United States for this? Well, the focus is on the Trump administration, and some of that's fair. I mean, he is the current leader. Obama's now out of office. But where were these pieces? It's just a few years ago. And as for President Trump, with his America First agenda, I mean, he at least is talking about the threat that Russia poses. He brought it out in his national security speech last Monday. And he, for all of his talk about building up the U.S. military, really, I mean, if you look through this past year, there's no, as she brings out in her piece, there's no sweeping new plan for countering Putin. Most of this is just about holding the line. Most of this is just about maintaining a decent relationship with Russia and then building up America's defenses. But look, Russia's preparing for conflict. Russia's preparing for all-out war. I'm not suggesting that the war is going to be between the United States and Russia. We'll get into my father's Key of David clips here in just a second. But we've got to see where this is leading the world, the entire world. Just to conclude her piece at Politico, she says, make no mistake about it, a full generation after the Cold War ended, we are back to buying time, back to shrugging our shoulders about what happens on Europe's eastern borders and consigning Russians to their fate. Integrating Russia with the West was the cornerstone of American policy since 1991. It has failed. There is no new plan. It's failed. I mean, basically, we're back in the 1980s. The 1980s are calling, saying, this is an urgent warning. Politico says, instead, there is a conflict that is everywhere and nowhere, and no one can say for sure what we're even in no one can say for sure that we are even in the fight. When I think of the millions dead in Stalin's purges and those who were later shot and killed trying to escape the Berlin Wall, it seems wrong to call this new confrontation by the same name as the old one. But the point is not its name. The point is its reality. See, we're right back where we were. Here, Russia's headed up by a man prophesied in your Bible, Ezekiel 38, the Prince of Rosh. It's discussed in our new booklet, The Prince of Russia. My father put together a program by that same title a year ago, right at this time, 12 months ago, December 20th, 2016, from his Key of David program, The Prophesied Prince of Rosh. Here's clip two.
We have a brand new booklet that is titled The Prophesied Prince of Russia, and we'd like to send you a free copy. All of our literature is free, and I'll tell you, you will find this to be a mind-stunning booklet, perhaps like you've never read before. It is a wide-ranging prophecy, one of the biggest I would think in the entire Bible. But there's a reason why Russia is in the news daily and so often, because they are being so aggressive and very dangerous in this world. And many people see that. In fact, everybody ought to see it. They are a mighty power. They have all kinds of military might, and this Prince of Rosh is not afraid to use it. And that's what's causing a lot of problems in the world. Now, God's prophet Ezekiel prophesied all about this to us, and it is indeed a world-shaking prophecy.
He's talking about those opening verses in Ezekiel 38, where it refers to the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, or as it should read, the prince of Rosh, Meshach, and Tubal. It's referring to Russia. Rosh is just the ancient name of Russia. You can, again, if you want to go into your own personal study, you can find this out with some good commentaries and lexicons. But get my father's booklet, The Prophesied Prince of Russia, and he explains all of it. In one little booklet, you can come right up to speed with this in one sitting. Here's what he had to say, continuing in that same program from a year ago, clip three.
This great swath of land, all the way from the east to the west. Now, that's a huge piece of real estate. And here is an individual ruler that rules all of this whole vast area that sounds very much like the former Soviet Union. And already Russia has conquered states that were in that former Soviet Union. Georgia won, and now the Ukraine, they control Ukraine, and Vladimir Putin ordered a devastating cyber attack against Estonia in 2007. So this prophecy, if you think about it, indicates that they may take some more of those nations in that former Soviet Union. And there's a reason why Vladimir Putin is doing that, because he thought that was the greatest time of Russia's glory in this modern age. That's the way he thinks. Now, he's going to be, I think, taking over some more of those countries that were in that area. But just think about this big swath of land over there that it's talking about here. And all of it is ruled by the Prince of Russia. Huge, monstrous amount of land and evil going on there. And all of this prophecy is being fulfilled now.
It's being fulfilled now, this prophecy. It's leading to World War III. He's preparing for it. Putin's preparing for World War III, just like the Newsweek headline says. And as my father brought out a year ago, I mean, he thinks that this is like the Soviet Union 2.0. He wants to return to the glory days of the USSR. And he's taken over Georgia and Ukraine and Estonia. The cyber attack, as my father mentioned there. He's building an empire. And the whole world is watching. Or is it? Is it watching? Is it concerned? Can you trust human beings? Can you trust the heart of man? Is this world a pretty good place? Is it safe? Is it safe for your children? Is it safe for the families living in Moscow or Berlin or Damascus or Baghdad? Well, what about Haifa and Tel Aviv? What about Britain? What about the United States? Is it a safe place? It's building to an explosion, and all the nations of this earth are going to be drawn into it. Great tribulation, Jesus said. Matthew 24, verses 21 and 22. One final clip from that same program a year ago. This is clip 4.
Now look, this is what Russia is doing. And where is it all leading? The Bible tells you exactly where it's leading. This may sound astounding to you, but if you read the book of Joel, you'll find that this is actually called God's army. He's going to use it for something. And you need to understand Bible prophecy to understand that. God is orchestrating His plan on this earth, and we need to know what it is. But here God says the heathen are going to get to know Him. It's God's army. He's orchestrating all of this, and He's going to cause the heathen to get to know Him because of all this great turmoil and war in the world. Isn't that amazing that God works this out that way? This is building toward World War III and all the nuclear bombs and that. And Vladimir Putin, whether we realize it or not, is a sign. It's a sign of the second coming of Jesus Christ, which is imminent. It's a sign of that.
That's my father again from a program a year ago, The Prophesied Prince of Russia. That's from late December in 2016. I mean, we have to see where all of this is building, as he brought out there. But at the same time, I mean, and here's the hope. God's orchestrating it all. God's causing this in order for the heathen to get to know Him. We talked about so many of those heathen and pagan practices on yesterday's program. What is it going to take for people to acknowledge the pagan origins of so many of these customs and traditions that we just love in the world today, and to say, I don't want that anymore. I want God's traditions. I want God's ordinances. I want God's knowledge and God's revelation. I want God's law. I want His holiness, His perfection, His character. Well, that's what God wants for us. And He has a plan. He's orchestrating a plan to bring it all about, to offer salvation to all of mankind. Well, I'll just refer you. I've got another section here just about some of the detail that Richard Palmer went into last week. He referred to this piece at Real Clear Defense, Putin, the Destroyer of Cities. And my father touched on that in a program earlier this year. I think the one from July 7th. Just talking about Vladimir Putin's background in the KGB and his upbringing and his aims, his ambition, and just how ruthless he's been. Again, a lot of this has been discussed previously, most recently in that trumpet brief from last week, which is also on Richard Palmer's blog page. Is Vladimir Putin really so bad? That was posted on December 22nd. Just last week. Go back and make sure that you check that out. And then also maybe you can run a search, since I don't think we have time to play these other clips that I had from the Prophesied Prince of Russia Part 2. That's from July 7th, 2017. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we're going to be playing a montage that you don't want to miss. We'll be right back. Come on.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
I will say that the thing I'm most proud of, Jake, is an administration now acknowledging that we still have 6 days left or 5 days left. That has been historically free of scandal.
The president prides himself on the fact that his administration hasn't had a scandal and that he hasn't done anything to embarrass himself.
Look, I'm proud of the fact that with 2 weeks to go, we're probably the first administration in modern history that hasn't had a major scandal in the White House.
The president was 8 years scandal-free.
He and his entire family.
But this is a president who's gone out with no personal scandal.
And he's been scandal-free, frankly, in the White House. We haven't had that for a while.
Having saved us from a Great Depression and having had a scandal-free 8 years in office, handing off to somebody he never imagined he would be handing off to, but completing a term as president that will be viewed not just positively, but among the best in our history.
Donald Trump wins the presidency.
Already the Trump White House is being investigated for possible collusion between their campaign and Russian operatives.
We're looking at him, and he is delusional. He is believing his own lies, and we cannot trust him to execute the duties of the office, and he needs to be removed from office.
It's not a rabbit trail. Yeah. There's so much evidence right here for them to follow. They're going to be doing this for quite some time.
Watergate pales, really, in my view, as compared to what we're confronting now.
If it's related to the Trump-Russia scandal, it's going to be as big as Watergate.
Collusion, obstruction of justice, cover-up, money laundering, just some of the phrases being used with increasing regularity as we reach day 122 of the Trump administration.
Sam's. That's quite a contrast between these two presidents and the way that they've been covered in the major media. You can see why President Obama gets a free pass on Vladimir Putin and Russia. You can see why there were no headlines, so far as I know. There were no headlines in that previous 8 years that Putin's preparing for World War III is President Obama. 8 years. I mean, in a lot of ways, in the 8 years that Obama was in office, Russia, I mean, that's quite a step up from where Russia was back in 2008, let's say, and on up to today. And now, I mean, now even Newsweek's acknowledging that Russia's readying for World War III. And, of course, we can't argue with that, as I said in the first segment. It is true. But for the previous administration, no scandal, nothing even embarrassing. And then Trump gets in office, and within, what, 5-6 months, you have collusion, you have delusional, he can't be trusted, he needs to be removed from office, this is worse than Watergate, it's obstruction of justice, it's a cover-up, and on it goes. So you're not going to get the truth from the major media. You're just not going to get it. All that you're going to get is bias. All that you're going to get is agenda. It's agenda-driven. It's all politics. They're not really in the business of giving the American people or the world at large the truth. They just want to carry on with their radically left-wing bias. Save a few outlets. My father, going back to those two programs. I didn't get to those two clips. The Prophesied Prince of Russia, Part 2. This is from July of earlier this year, and I just want to play for you what my father had to say about Russia and how it is helping Iran. This is clip number 5.
Iran is the number one terrorist sponsoring nation in the world, and Vladimir Putin has given him very heavy, hefty support, even in developing nuclear weapons. Iran's number one goal is to destroy America. They call America the Great Satan. And then their number two goal is to destroy the nation called Israel in the Middle East. They're the number two Satan. And Vladimir Putin keeps supporting this vile, sick policy that Iran has.
Well, of course. I mean, he's preparing for World War III. And in Iran right now, he's got a strong ally. So he's providing all kinds of support, even in developing Iran's nuclear weapons. And then you read about Iran and its growing power and its effort to destroy America, the great Satan, and then Israel in the Middle East. You'll remember on this program a week or two ago, we went through Josh Myers' Politico piece, the secret backstory of how Obama let Hezbollah off the hook. I mean, this was an in-depth feature. Richard Palmer was on the program, I think, talking about it. I believe he said 14,000 words, three-part series. This was all done under President Obama's watch. And yet no scandal here as far as the major media is concerned. This is just to be brushed aside. Jonathan Tobin had a piece at National Review just a couple days ago about the media blackout on Obama's Hezbollah scandal. I mean, the blackout was in place all through the 8 years of President Obama's presidency, and yet it continues. It continues as more evidence is made known about this nefarious arrangement, really the Obama administration squashing the effort to go after Hezbollah and its fundraising efforts with illegal drug smuggling and such. You remember even during President Obama's reign, how that Ben Rhodes was out there bragging about the echo chamber and making up stories and making fun of reporters, saying how naive and foolish they were. Tobin at National Review says, but while Rhodes and the rest of the Obama team have given way to President Trump's staff, the media echo chamber devoted to defending Obama's appeasement of Iran that he cultivated is still with us. You see, he still can do no wrong, no scandal, nothing embarrassing. And, you know, we haven't seen that. We haven't seen that. And the past year, collusion, delusion, worse than Watergate, obstruction of justice. Tobin says here, Meyer built a strong case. This is talking about that Politico piece. He's commenting on the Politico piece from a week or two ago and is saying, why is there a media blackout? Still, he says about Meyer's piece, he built a strong case that showed that efforts to halt the regular traffic of cash, drugs, and terrorists between Beirut, Tehran, and Venezuela was quashed by orders from the top of the Obama administration. Then CIA Director John Brennan and Secretary of State John Kerry believed nothing should be allowed to interfere with the nuclear talks, even if it meant Iran's narco-terrorist foot soldiers were allowed to escape justice. Meyer's report made sense not just because the DEA sources pointed to the way a promising probe had been prevented from making arrests, but also because Brennan was on record as believing that Hezbollah moderates, quote unquote, must be cultivated And Kerry had made it plain that he was willing to make any possible concession to get Iran to agree to any kind of deal, no matter how weak it might prove to be. It says, if true, this is Meyer's report, the undermining of Cassandra, that's the effort to go after these narco-terrorists, the undermining of Cassandra is a major scandal since it shows that the Obama administration was willing to prioritize the interests of Iran and its Hezbollah auxiliaries, as well as their Russian allies, over its duty to protect American citizens. See, this is a real scandal. This is a scandal of the highest order. And yet, the echo chamber remains in place. The Obama echo chamber remains fully in place. It says the Cassandra story ought to resonate with the media since it comes at the end of a year during which Washington has been transfixed by an investigation into whether the Trump presidential campaign colluded with a foreign power and whether the president obstructed the probe looking into the matter. Though not exactly analogous to those still unproven allegations, the possibility that President Obama and his minions obstructed the justice system in order to avoid offending Iran and Russia is a scandal that is every bit as bad as, if not worse than, what Trump is accused of doing. I mean, with so many of the allegations aimed at Trump, there's nothing even proven yet. And here we have all this from Josh Meyer over at Politico, writing for the left-wing Politico. Tobin says at National Review, yet the strangest thing about this story is the way it's being ignored by the same mainstream media that breathlessly report every twist and turn in the Russia collusion investigation, even when there's nothing to report other than baseless speculation. He talks in this piece, I'm not going to have time to get into all of it. Well, the blackout is in place. You don't read about it at the New York Times. The Washington Post just put a little blog posting about it. If not for Fox News and the New York Post and a few like that, I mean, you would know nothing about this story. National Review posted another piece on the topic. The Iran Echo Chamber Smear Politico. And this one talked about how all of those coming forward to defend the Obama administration, they talk about, oh, well, Meyer and this Josh Meyer piece, it's just a hit job. It's a neocon hit piece. It's a disgusting hit job, one is quoted as saying. Ben Rhodes. Non-fact-based anti-Iran deal propaganda. That's what Ben Rhodes calls this. It's anti-Iran deal propaganda. He is the author of the propaganda that got the Iran deal through. All of it. A false narrative. He admitted as much. How much credibility does he have coming out saying that Josh Meyer's story is nothing but manufactured propaganda? This National Review piece says what former Obama officials were reacting to wasn't some innovative argument against the Iran deal, but damning evidence of Obama's reckless disregard for national security in pursuit of a fantastic rapprochement with Iran. See, they talked about how that Myers didn't have any supports, or rather any sources, any credible sources. And I don't have time, as I say, to get into all of the details at these National Review articles. But there's a lot of evidence, certainly when you look at the way the media covers every little twist and turn in the so-called Russian collusion story today. When you think about the kinds of sources that Josh Meyer cites in his piece at Politico from a couple weeks ago, it's damning evidence. And leaving even all that aside, look, as I said at the top of the program, look at Hezbollah today as compared to Hezbollah just before President Obama came into office. That 2006 war, the 34-day war, between Hezbollah and Israel. It had fewer than 15,000 missiles in its arsenal, according to Foreign Policy. It fired off 4,000 of those missiles during that 34-day war in 2006. That's an average of 100 per day. And of course, Israel countered that and went after those missile silos to try to take them out. Flash forward to today, Foreign Policy says, estimates of Hezbollah's rocket and missile force now range between 120,000 and 150,000. That's an absolutely stunning number, especially when you consider that the UN resolution that ended the war in 2006 allegedly prohibited all efforts to rearm the terrorist group. Well, how is Hezbollah rearming? Where is it getting all this money? Instead of just over 100 missiles per day, the next war is likely to see Israel experiencing barrages of up to 1,500 rockets and missiles per day, even with the sophisticated multi-layered missile defense system that Israel currently fields. The likelihood that they will be overwhelmed by the sheer number of incoming explosives, at least in the war's opening days, is very high, with potentially thousands of powerful warheads raining down on crowded population centers. Some Israeli planners are preparing for as many as hundreds of civilian deaths every day during the conflict's first week. This is Hezbollah today, preparing for war, large-scale war, because Iran, its state sponsor, is preparing for war. World war, just as so many other nations on this earth are doing. This piece at Foreign Policy, it says relatively early in the Syrian conflict, when Israeli leaders publicly declared that one of their red lines would be efforts by Iran to transfer game-changing weapons to Hezbollah, stopping the delivery of these types of deadly missiles was uppermost in their minds. Well, it talks about how many of these convoys that Israel took out. But did they get all of them? Foreign Policy thinks not. These are not just more missiles than what Hezbollah had in 2006. These are much better, more sophisticated, more powerful missiles. All of this funding, all of this backing from Iran. And you put it together with these latest revelations of what the Obama administration turned a blind eye to for 8 years. All of this drug trafficking, billions of dollars into the hands of Hezbollah, hundreds of billions into the hands of the mullahs, thanks to the nuclear deal. It says here, finally, during the debate over the Iran agreement, former U.S. President Barack Obama frequently made the point that if Iran did make a dash for the bomb in 15 or 20 years, the United States would have the same options available to stop a weapons program as we have today, including, if necessary, military options. Foreign Policy says, stopping Iran's mullahs from eventually following in the footsteps of North Korea and acquiring nuclear weapons will be hard enough as it is, but it will be almost certainly impossible if Iran, through its continued arming of Hezbollah, is effectively permitted to take a U.S. or Israeli military option off the table. I skipped over a chunk of it, but basically it's saying if Hezbollah poses that kind of threat immediately north of Israel, right at the Israeli border, the fact that they can just rain a barrage of missiles down on Israel at a moment's notice, it gives Iran a lot of leverage as it rushes to build a nuclear bomb. Iran's behind it all. They're the prophesied king of the South. Your Bible says Iran's going to trigger World War III. As my father wrote in the King of the South booklet, Israel is losing its war with the terrorists, and so will the U.S. and Britain. Such terrorism will tear any free society apart. He says the only way to win such a war is to deal with the main source of terrorism or to cut off the head of the terrorist snake. But neither the U.S. nor Israel has the will to tackle Iran, even though it is the key part of the axis of evil in the Middle East. These are the powers rising to the fore. In the Middle East, you have Iran. You have Russia reemerging. Russia, all around its borders, you have it expanding. And it, you have an empowered Russia. And so much of this, that's the other story in all this, is the United States empowering these nations, these enemies, these powers. Daniel 11:40 talks about this spectacular clash. We haven't even talked about Europe. The clash between Europe and the King of the South. America's out of the picture by that point, and Israel, as we know, is going to turn to Germany. Big mistake. All of this clears the way for worldwide conflagration. And then finally, the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.